today's speaker, Arlene Anderson.
Thank you. So I'm happy to share with everyone via webinar the Region 2 UFP/QAP training. We're going to do this in two folds. We're going to have a quick refresher on QAP, and then we're going to move into the Region 2 generic UFP/QAP plan that we have for chemical responses. I'm an OSC with Region 2. I've been here for 17 years. I have a BS in Environmental Bio and MS in Management Engineering. 10 years with Westchester County Health Department, and plus the 17 that I've already mentioned with US EPA, so feeling a little old. We're going to talk about consistency and the problems and how we came about creating this generic QAP via Region 2. Hopefully everybody can use this as an example or expand about on it and make it a better fit for your region and for your situation. History. We have the first slide, number 3, says Quality Assurance Training for Chemical Emergency Response. Bill Side is our UFP expert here in our Division of Environmental Science and Assessment in Edison, New York, in New Jersey. Amelia Jackson is our QAP coordinator. And then I'm the OSC, and we also had some contractors from Weston Solution to help contribute to creating the presentation and the actual generic QAP. As we start talking about QAP, I mentioned that we were experiencing in Region 2 a lot of consistency issue in regards to project managers, remedial project managers, OSCs, not getting a timely response. Getting different formats for QAP, actually physically sampling before you have an idea of why you want to sample and what your issue is at a site, or in this case, emergency response. We had timely deliverable issues, whether it's support staff and EPA and contractors. We needed brief and not so complicated plans, which we were not receiving. This all came to a head during World Trade Center, which initiated my interest in following through and trying to comprehend what is the problem in Region 2 and how to come up with a solution so we never experience that. So I may refer to the World Trade Center a lot because that's where we had the most heartburn. And that is the site, or the incident, if you want, that was the catalyst to creating this. So when we experienced this, we decided to do a work group with all the people that had some form of role or responsibility with QAP or a QA system or implementing them, and we just sat down as a work group and tried to figure out, you know, each division or program's point of view. We focus on everybody's roles and responsibility, regulations that were out there, SOPs, guidance, defined the problem, and we came up with this solution. So hopefully it's going to be helpful to you, and we can move on to slide number 4. Our training objective, this is a quick refresher, like I said. We're going to talk about QA, the environmental information, what's the basis of EPA's quality system, and the actual QA process, the PI, planning, implementation, and evaluation, and what is your role and responsibility regardless of if you're state or federal agencies that may be involved in sampling. And what would a QA do for you, how it would help you. Now, we can move on to slide 5. Take a hold on there. So as you know, the QA system is supposed to make sure that we have useful data. It's supposed to make sure that it's defendable. Similar to the incident command system, it's a tool to help you plan, implement, and evaluate data or information that you may collect in an emergency response or incident or site work or site identification. It's a way to make sure that the data we use is appropriate for the decision that will be made and justify the logic or methods used. So that's where we're getting into right now. A lot of the World Trade Center, we were sampling prior to even having a QAP or even understanding what we were doing. And it became very difficult. And when things were being evaluated later on, we were found wanting as far as what was the decision, why we sampled here, why you used TEM versus PCM, that kind of stuff. And having experienced that, I decided that we should really get more unified and form a collaborative and integrated system. So why do we have a QAP? Well, you want to have a good legal standing. You want credibility. You need to defend your decision. You want to save time, and you want to save money. Especially now, it's very critical with budgets being the way they are. You want to choose analytical methods with low detection limits when necessary, because that means a lot of money. So if you can do with less as far as the quantitative validation, and that's appropriate for the site, you can do so. The only way you're going to do that is if you understand why you have the site or what you think the problems are, because they may not necessarily hold true when you sample. So you want to be able to get all the parties involved in the planning phase of the PI. You want to structure the planning to focus on the useful results. You want to foster the communication on all the people that need to participate, whether it's state or local government or other sister agency in the federal system. You need to document. You also need to show when information proves to be different than the original assumption, you need to document that and follow it up. So the system is to ensure that the data is defendable, accurate, adequate for the decisions that are being made. So again, we talked about the World Trade Center. We had no data. We had no QAP. We didn't understand exactly what we were sampling. And it became very confusing, and we ended up having to spend more money going back to make sure that we did address all the issues once we understood the issues. Again, it was an emergency response, and there wasn't really a lot of time, like most of the sites and site investigation for remedial, where you can sit back and look at it. Sometimes you don't. So the concept here is you have a generic plan, and that will help you, because most of the work that EPA does, it's the same thing. The only thing that changes is the site-specific information. So the idea is to make a generic plan, and then you add the site-specific. But we're going to get into that more in the later half of the training. Okay, we're going to move on to slide 6. Or actually, yeah, stay on slide 6, and then I'm going to add some stuff before we really address 6. We have to understand the use of the data and the usability of the data. For example, when we did Hurricane Katrina, we needed to identify the difference between drums and tanks and gas cans and cylinders. And we had a problem. We had to keep on going back because the individuals were not clearly understanding the QAP as it was written by the individuals. And although it wasn't one, it was a group effort, but we realized the lesson learned there was that we needed to define that stuff. So that's another example where you need to define the criteria in order to determine the usefulness of it. what kind of environmental information you're trying to establish. Is it monitoring information? Is it actual sample results that go to the lab with a quantitative validation attached to it, instrument readings, observations, incident rates, measures? You have to take all of this into consideration, the frequency of distribution, surveys, measurements. All of that is part of your environmental information. Additionally, you have secondary data use. This was a technical term, and I realize we're being recorded. This became a hot mess for Region 2 in regards that when data was being collected by other agencies, we never bothered or didn't have the time, I should say, to comprehend that secondary data was out there, what the limitations of the use of that data was, or limitations that would cause us. We agreed to host a one-stop shop for all this data, but we couldn't validate it, we couldn't QAQC it, and there was an issue on how they were sampled and what analysis were being taken, and whether or not you had a correlation. So that became a huge heartburn, and it turned into a real hot mess for us because we didn't have the ability to take the time and consider this. And so I recommend that if you have the time now before the incident, you plan. There was some baseline information, background information that if you have it, it's a plus. But you also need to consider that because that's still secondary information. So examples that we have is we have a stream or a waterway being impacted. We might be able to go to the state and get some information because they had to characterize surface waters. So that might be good, but then you have to look at the data and see whether or not it's useful and whether or not it fits your need. If it doesn't, then it's not very good for you. Occasionally, like in the World Trade Center, there was no baseline comparison that we had. It really stumped us. In another incident, we have Con Edison, which is one of our major power authorities here in New York and New Jersey. They have a lot of asbestos insulated old steam lines and power lines that are covered. And the issue of PCM and TEM becomes a problem for us. You know, they're different, and there's a reason why they're different. There's other methods like absent present. I'm not very familiar with that one, but I know that in Libby, Montana, Region A has done that. That really doesn't help unless you're just trying to identify whether or not you may have to go back and sample. So you have to consider all of these issues that may impact the quality of your sampling plan. All right. So what you want to do, you want to make sure that your quality assurance is developed and implementable as per all the regulations. We also have this in our grants, in our contracts, IAGs, internal projects, and we have several different sections of EPA sending out documents. Now, I talked about uniform federal plan versus the quality assurance project plan. Those are two different entities. And this may only be an impact to EPA, but the OSCs have always been confused as to which one do we implement, because both directives that came out regarding QAP and the UFP said that we're going to do this for Superfund sites, but they weren't clear as to what the definition is for Superfund sites. Now, UFP is usually used for long-term remedial kind of projects, and QAP is used for, like, day-to-day. But when you do emergency response, you don't have a quick, easy-to-spot, streamlined delineation of, oh, okay, this is where QAP stops and we need to do a UFP. So when we get to the generic plan that I want to discuss with you guys, You can see how I tried to streamline it for the field responders, not just OSCs. Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
This is
RERT from Las Vegas.
Yeah?
I just want to understand, we jumped in a little bit late. I have problems with the audio on the webcast, but we have someone that has a code online, and I'm just trying to figure out how the flow of the presentation is going to be. Are you guys going to be controlling the presentation, or are we going to be clicking through the 24/5?
Mike?
Yeah, so you have to click through the slides. So you'll have to go ahead and do that on your own. She'll call out the slide numbers.
What slide are you guys on?
Six.
Thank you very much.
Go ahead, Arlene.
Okay, he rattled me. Now I got to figure out where I am. Okay, I was talking about the UFP and the QAP. When do you... implement either one of them on particularly Superfund sites. That became a big situation with all the big sites that we've been doing, you know, the hurricanes, World Trade Center, the shuttle, stuff like that. So in Region 2, when we formed our work group, which is slide 6 now we're on, we were trying to figure out, you know, when does one fit best as far as quality assurance and how do we make sure that we're following the appropriate format or style for the particular situation. So what we've done, which is slide 6, we decided to define the process into three parts. The initial incident monitoring QAP, that's like immediate needs, emergency management type of emergency response, if you will. And that way, we have at least an initial QAP, and we no longer go out there without a QAP. You go out there with something. Like I said before, what EPA does is the same thing. It only changes based on site-specific information. So our concept was to do the generic QAP, following both the UFP and QAP format. Therefore, we don't have to worry whether or not we have a QAP when it should be a UFP or a UFP when it should be a QAP. So we kind of evolved into a one-stop shop, one generic form to help us along. After we decided that we were going to do that, we said, well, we decided that there's going to be an intermittent or middle of the road transitional phase, if you will, a follow-up monitoring. This is more like you're moving out of your emergency response phase, but you're still time critical. So that's why we mentioned that there. You're doing the same sampling day in, day out. You may vary when you get new information, so you have to adjust for that. So we wanted to make sure that we have followed everything that we're supposed to do. When you get audited or when you get a couch quarterback, you can defend what you did and why you did it and what the logic was. So you still want to know the same. We know the same things. We know that the methods are not going to change all that much. You know the quantity. You know the quality. So we need to identify these three types of situations. So hence, the last one, the UFP/QAP, is more long-term, more in line with a remedial project kind of thing, or a removal that is exceeding the 12-month exemption. So that's how we define those three different types of situation where it would change our need or the quality or the detailing of the QAP. Of course, you have to keep on monitoring and making sure that the information you had to make your decision as far as QAP, it entails a comprehensive site-specific information and change it as necessary. And this way we could provide the seamless progression of events for the EPA field staff and hopefully less heartburn. So you have to keep on visiting it and modify it as necessary, which means you have to document as well and make sure that your QAP needs meet the needs of the sampling and they're both in sync. So why do we need QAP? Well, for every project EPA conducts that's funded by EPA, it involves the collection or the use of environmental information required in a QAP. And the data of the project has to be pretty clear. And it may or may not involve secondary use of data. So you have to be very clear. If you're going to use it, you need to identify it, make sure you understand, and have an analysis of the data and make sure that it fits your particular situation. We're moving on to slide 7. Okay. I've been talking about the generic QAP for chemical measures. This particular presentation is only doing chemical because it's pretty lengthy. But the idea that we implemented in Region 2, we also have one for RAD, and we have one for asbestos and WMD, and also for biologicals. And that was the concept. So we can do very generic, targeted QAPs, and then all you do is add the specific initial incident monitoring information and then go up to your screen levels and produce a viable and defendable QAP sampling report, okay? And in doing this, we provide a nice format. We provide a good document, which we need to use. There's guidance as a tool to assist you in the QAP preparation. You're no longer figuring out what kind of format. The format is already established. The UFP has a series of worksheets. We also incorporated that concept into the UFP/QAP generic plan. You have a format already established. It makes it easier for everybody to read and understand and definitely identify anything that may be missing specific to your site. And then you can add that and make sure that the writing of it, the reviewing of it, the signing off of it happens in a timely manner. You could use a graded approach here. You can have the flexibility that allows you to meet the QA requirements for the planning and documentation of sampling events. Then again, we talked about the ER, time critical and non-time critical. And you have that kind of establishment which will have to occur site specific. All right, so we're going on to slide number 8. We're going to hang on there. Again, the uniform federal policy versus the QAP elements, we combine them, and in this particular generic QAP, and that's part of your resources there, so you can download it and kick it around, and if you have any comments about how to improve it, you have the three names there and telephone number on how to reach us. We would love input. The element sections that we have provided is the project management and objectives, the measurements and the data acquisitions, the assessment oversight, and data review. That's going to help you get a better product or a better project. Okay? Slide number 8, again, what will help? How would QA help you? Well, it's going to provide more confidence on the data or the sampling that you've used. You're going to have a comprehensive approach with all of the people that should be there. It builds up a teamwork because you have better communications. You got something that you can defend legally and hopefully save time and money. Okay, slide number 9. It helps you put everything on paper and understand everything, not forget something, keeps you focused. Remember that in the co-op is planning, implementation, evaluation. Most of the time you're going to spend is in the planning side of the house. The more you spend in that section, taking a serious look at your site and what is needed will eventually help you not make any mistakes and have a very comprehensive approach and get everybody involved. And so now we're going to get into the evaluation side of the house. I'm sorry. Did I mess up? No, I already talked about implementing and documenting changes. Okay, sorry. Evaluation is essential. Conducting this assessment is to determine what has been done, what needs to be done, whether or not your assumptions or your concepts are correct and general practice, and it helps you reevaluate and make whatever corrections necessary should new information be provided and validated as to something is wrong or additional, what they call an ICS mission creeping. That happens a lot in EPA, and when I worked for the county, it also happened too. But the other thing you want to do is be able to defend. Lately, everything we touch seems to be politically charged, and so you need to stay with the science and make sure that it is appropriate. So somebody needs to sit there and make sure and evaluate that the quality of the data is what you need for the public or to make decisions about public health or life threats, any of those concerns that we may have, and make sure we stay within our authority. And again, you don't want mission creeping when you're outside your authority because you're hanging out there and you may be liable. You want to be able to do all types of assessment as far as, you know, whether or not the field observation is cohesive with what you assume. In an emergency situation, you do have the support of the environmental unit, and most of this will fall on the environmental unit leader's responsibility to make sure this is happening. And then you have the situation unit that's collecting the data and bringing it back into your incident management team, and you're assessing whether or not what you assume is happening and what needs to be done is falling in line. If it's not, you can make adjustments and document these adjustments to make sure they're appropriate. The OSC's ultimate responsibility is to oversee all aspects of data collection activities being performed by the EPA contractor, or if you're doing PRP oversight, that is your responsibility. So you want to assess the data, you want to review it, you want a verification, validation, and reconciliation with the usefulness of the data. If it's not, then you're going to have a problem. So you want to be able to do that. Again, I'm not claiming to be a lab expert, but you want to make sure that that's happening. Then we're getting into the usability stuff. You got to understand what you can use the data for and how to use it. So you have to have a disclaimer as well, because all kinds of people through freedom of information or through investigations or audit will take your data and may not use it in the form that you intended it to be used. So it's very important that you document your logic and why your team or the OSC or whoever is responsible for the project is making the decisions. And you need to push that forward. All right, roles and responsibility. I know that many OSCs and EPA say, oh, that's not my responsibility, and feel that that's not their job, that, you know, they don't need to deal with it. They could pass it off to the lab staff that has been assigned for their site, or the contractor, and that's it, check it off the list. Well, it's not. It's everybody's responsibility. And it's not exactly, and I'm not meaning to offend any lab people, but it's not exactly, you know, the romantic portion of doing field work for us, the non-lab people. And I consider although I'm interested, I'm not a lab person at all. I am certified to take samples, and I understand it, and I'm sort of interested only, but I'm only interested in the way that it helps the quality of my project. I want to do a good job. So, but we all have responsibility. So we all have to get involved in the planning process. You can't forget how important it is for everybody that's touching the project. And also, if you're doing cost recovery or enforcement, it gets more critical, as well as when we have political eyes on a particular site, how important it is that we understand that we all have the responsibility for this. So you have to ensure that you generate scientifically sound data, sufficient quality to make the environmental decision, even in the midst of a disaster or a high-profile incident of national significance, regardless. You have to make sure that that is appropriate. And then we're up to slide 10, where it's questions. After that, we'll go into the generic plan.
For those of you, everybody that's participating with the online version, you can hit the question mark button at the top of your screen, and that'll bring up a form for you to fill out to ask your question. This time I don't have any questions for you, Arlene, online. The important thing there is, everybody, that you can ask questions using that form at any time. It won't interrupt the instructor. And if you're on the phone line right now, you can unmute your phone and go ahead and ask questions on this first portion of the webinar. It's #6 to unmute if you hit *6 to mute. And for the second portion here of the seminar, what we'd like you to do is go ahead and use the online form to ask questions, but to do it as quickly as they come, because what I'm going to attempt to do is stop Arlene at the end of each slide if you have questions, so we can get those answered as she's going through these demonstrations. We did have a question that came in. Is the entire region on board with the formatting of the QAPs? Coming from
yes. And okay. And what we've done is, like I said, I worked with the Division of Environmental. Let me see if I get this right, because they changed their name. Division of Environmental Science and Assessment in Region 2. Amelia Jackson and Bill Tsai. They're part of our sampling group and our lab group, and so this was a comprehensive Region 2 approach, and then we reported out to all the directors and deputy directors, and it was well received, and we use it in everything that EPA does. But we also, a couple of years ago, when our contracts for Weston and our contracts for ERS came up, part of you getting awarded the contract was that you had to incorporate the generic QAP into your contract. So you have to produce this form. Any other questions?
I don't have any. Why don't you go ahead and let's move on to the next section.
Okay. So we talked about this, and so now we're going to move on. We have, you have this as part of your resource in the revision 3, January 2011. That's the latest and greatest mod to our generic QAP. Again, I mentioned this is the chemical one, and we have a rad one, we have an asbestos one, and weapons of mass destruction, and a biological one. And the concept is that we would keep them to its specific contaminants or media, okay? Overall, the QAP is not an option. It's not going to go away for those field people that don't like lab work. They're required. Like I mentioned, there's two separate directives, one for the UFP and one for the QAP. And the concept of this generic was to ease it and make it very seamless for those field work people who have a phobia to make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing without the heartache. So we came up with this. We combined the U.S., the uniform federal policy and the quality assurance project plan. We took the good portions of both of them. The UFP has worksheets, which is nice. You have less verbal redundancy without really saying much. You fill out the forms, and you should be good to go because all the known information is there, and you fill out the blanks. The concerns we had, we were Region 2 created this as a go kit for all the OSCs and all the field sampling staff that we have in all the different programs. So we wanted to make sure the we had the latest and greatest. We didn't want to have to keep on creating this. So the solution to that was that we hyperlinked everything. That way we didn't have to worry about modifications, because if you hyperlink it to web links within the EPA system, like sampling procedures from ERT, once they change it, you always get the latest and greatest. So we wouldn't have to change it every 10 seconds when a new policy or guidance came out. Modifications, the only time you need to modify is when we get new SOPs or policies, but then again, if you hyperlink as much as you can, there's less modification requirements. You don't want to be chasing information and wasting your time, which is what most of the field staff complains about, that, you know, they never get the good, you know, by the time they need the information, it's changed and stuff like that. So it's already established, it's maintained, you have experts, you have program staff that are familiar. That opens up the communications. I don't know about the other regions, but sometimes we sit, the labs is just across the street from where the OSCs and the inspectors sit. We have sometimes a little bit of a difficulties walking 200 feet and talking to each other. So this kind of opened it up and created a more cohesive team approach for us. You can maintain your site without micromanagement from our senior management, or you can keep political pressures at bay if you're clear and you stick to the science, because that's what we're about. And in Region 2, we call it feed the beast. If you feed them, you control the message, you give them what we are supposed to be doing within our authorities, then we could hopefully not have pushback as much. That doesn't mean that it clears you, but it does let you breathe a little bit and lets you focus on the site or the response that you're doing. The application to this, Scribe, GIS, GPS coordinates, maps, modeling, this also helps you create this in an easier way to form a message or to form an opinion or a decision on a site. For example, I do interactive maps to my site, which incorporate the GPS coordinates. I do GIS mapping based on this information. The lab results, we can also do modeling, and all of this is in a CD that allows me to walk over and do a presentation in an easy fashion, in a confident fashion, because I know that the quality of my work is solid because the QAP is comprehensive. Okay? Not everybody does that, but we're working hopefully to do that. It identifies locations. You can click on the dot on the map, and up comes your scribe sampling method, your results, portions of your QAP that relate to whatever the message I'm trying to give. So that works. And then, of course, the last portion that I want to mention is that we're constantly trying to improve on this and, make the field work, more about the field work, more about the quality that we're doing there, and that it's also defendable and justified, and the logic is clear, it's, the work is within our authority. So what I've decided now to do is slide number 11 gives you the crosswalk. And what we did was we identified the QAP sections and the UFP stuff. Is UFP format, and then the sections that are required in the QAP elements or corresponding sections and required information, and then it gives you the sections that are required based on the, I think it's 3 or 4 guidance documents that came out from headquarters regarding QAP. Slide number 12 is a simple worksheet number 1. It gives you the titles, who's responsible, who has to read this. If you don't have an environmental unit leader, then obviously if you're not under the situation, your regular site work, then you, the titles would change. But basically you have people looking at the QAP who are all responsible for reviewing and implementing it. And that gives you the chain of authority there. Slide number 13 gives you worksheet number 2. It's identifying the information. So all you do here is just plug it in. Give it a name, a location. If you're remedial, it's an operable unit. Revisions, how many you've done, what's the last date. You identify the guidance in use to prepare it, the regulatory program. So this is clearly providing you the opportunity to document all the steps you're taking and why you're going to end up with the result that you end up with. Slide 14 is the distribution list. Who gets it? What organization? And we also provide for, like, electronic transfer. Worksheet number 6 is communication pathways. What's the procedure and the timeliness? And then you get the name and number. And it has everybody that touches it. Again, this particular example that we gave you is an ICS format for emergency response. So you can change the titles there as well. Then slide number 16 talks about the problems. You're actually defining your site and what the situation is, or your emergency response. And describe what you know. What's the project description? What are you using? All right. Or if you're getting a directive from a state, what are they asking you to do? Okay. Slide number 17 talks about project quality objectives and systematic planning process statements. So who, what, where, how? Okay. That's pretty self-explanatory. If you put it down, you get to look at it and see if you identified everything correctly. Again, if some assumptions made turn out to be false, you go back there and you fix it and then reevaluate whether or not you're on the right path or does your path need some correction. Now, slide number 18 talks about worksheet number 15, the limits and evaluation tables. Some of this information, you can see that we put New York State and DEC cleanup criteria. You could also use RAL's removal action level if that's what you have, because you have to make a decision. What are you going to evaluate your samples with? And then you're going to do the method as well. What is the quantitation limits? Slide 19. You have some more reference limitations and evaluation table. It allows you to look at what you're gauging your site results on. Now, again, I told you the way we did this generic QAP, we have 37 pages. You don't need all 37 worksheets. You just pluck out the ones that are appropriate to your situation and what you're sampling for, and then use them as appropriate. So slide number 20 talks about project sampling SOP references. Here you're identifying what SOPs you're using. And then you can see the hyperlink to the ERT org where you can collect a lot of SOP procedures. And you identify equipment, if you need to modify it, and any comments depending on if something has changed. And this also accounts for actual samples that are going to labs and real-time monitoring as well. So slide number 21, we have some field equipment calibration, maintenance testing, and inspection table. Now, some of this will come from a manufacturer. As you can see, the field equipment, they're blue. I don't know if you see the color, but they're hyperlinked, the field equipment. So you go directly to the manufacturer when you click on that, and you can make sure you have the latest and greatest calibration requirements, maintenance inspection. Again, you have to make sure that if you use field equipment or field monitoring equipment, that you can make sure you can defend this if you go into an enforcement or cost recovery situation. If you're not maintaining your equipment appropriately, you're going to get dinged and you're going to look foolish. All right? This is the way you make sure you provide the documentation that you are indeed within the authorities and acting appropriately. Now, my last slide is slide 22, where we talk about trace volatile organics. This is just one of the many sheets. I just took one out so you can see it. We showed the matrix is aqueous, and then there's also worksheets 28 A, B, C, D, depending on what the matrix is. And then you can identify the appropriate SOP sampling method, and you can also check them as well in the hyperlink that we have here and the Go Kit that we have. When you click on the particular method, it'll give you like a brief description. So if that's not what fits for your site, you can keep on looking for another method. And you could also click on it and go into the standards and methods and find out whether or not that's really the type of sampling method you want, an analytical method that you want. And, of course, the documentation of your site and the organization and who's picking it, who's taking the sample. And then some of this lab QC sample stuff, you're going to have to go to the lab and get the information from them as to detection levels, especially if you want to go real low. You might have to go, or you definitely have to go to the lab and have a discussion with the lab that's receiving this to make sure they can meet your requirements. And that in itself is valuable, because if you do that ahead of time, you don't have the surprise that the lab instrument cannot go as low as you need the detection level. And you can have that discussion ahead of time before having your samples in the wrong lab that can't meet your requirements for your site. So that pretty much in a nutshell is my spiel. Hopefully it's useful. Does anybody have any questions?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
You mentioned the Go Kit. Is that something that's on an open source website that anyone can access?
Mike, did you put it up on the website?
If you provided it to us, we have it.
Yeah, I think if you go into the sources, I gave the CD to Jody, and I think she said she was going to upload it on the source section for this seminar, mm-hmm. and you should be able to download all of that.
So what was the name of it?
Go back in here.
Yes, we have a list of quite a few resources here available on the additional resources area.
Yeah, all of them.
And if you go to the next slide, 23, there is actually a hyperlink that will take you to the resources area. And it's a quick way to download.
That's the Cluent hyperlink?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Again, if anybody has any comments or anything on any of these resources or we need to add some, please contact us. We'd be glad to add or modify. Again, the whole concept for this is to evolve. The more we know, the newer methods or anything like that, we can add it to our bag of tricks.
Yeah, and a related question regarding hyperlinks. The question is regarding URLs and how and if they change. Documents that we have, such as standardization analytical methods for Homeland Security events, are reviewed annually to ensure the links still work. How are you maintaining assurance that the hyperlinks in these documents remain accurate?
We go through them every year. And if we need to change it, then we'll change it and notify everybody, all the OSCs and lab people that there's been a modification. And we either put it on our web. We also have it on our website in Region 2, although we just had a revamp. I have no idea where that is now. We'll have to look at it. But like I said, we have a GoKit CD that will be issued to all the emergency responders and field staff.
Yeah, and I know also that the EPA is trying to do a better job of, you know, moving to a paradigm where the website has the link stays when the document is updated. Certainly not. I don't think it'll be like a digital object identifier because I don't think anybody's been talking about that. But again, I'm not an expert on it. But I know that we're as an agency trying to do a better job of that, of not leaving a link out there in the wind.
Yeah, and that was one of the things we looked at before we went to hyperlink. And we had gotten that information from Environmental Information Office, I think it's called, in headquarters, and they assured us that was their long-term plan. So if you got a URL, it was going to stay there. So that's why we went to the hyperlink.
This is there's a question that's a little bit broader regarding the UFP. Do you know which other federal agencies have adopted the UFP for quality assurance project plans? This person works for the USDA and is wondering if they need to be following the policy.
I know that if you're dealing with a remedial site, you will follow a UFP, whether it's a fund-led or PRP site. Mm-hmm. So I know that all our federal work, you know, like the BRAC bases that have remedial going on, I believe DOD is following the UFP when they clean up sites. I believe the Army Corps may be doing it as well, but I'm not sure if they have, like, certain criteria that would dictate a UFP. So I'm not sure about that.
This is Kevin Oates from the Army Corps of Engineers. I can verify that we are following UFP QAP for chemical sites, and we're soon to be following it for military munition sites as well.
There you go.
The Air Force and the Navy have both already formally adopted it for all their programs.
Great. Thank you.
That I don't know about Department of Agriculture, though.
Any other questions?
Yes. Regarding modifying it, how is the QAP modified during work?
I'm sorry?
How do you modify the QAP for a project? Or how does it modify the work process?
Well, it depends on whether or not you're going in as an ER or you're doing a site assessment to determine whether or not they are removal action qualified. So, you know, when you sample drinking water, it's sample drinking water, and there are only so many methods that you're going to pick. So when you get to a site, you need to determine, you know, is this a water sampling event? Yes. Is it drinking water? Okay. So you move on into like a flow chart, per se, in your thought process, and then you go, okay, so what am I looking for? I'm looking for VOCs, semi-VOCs. Am I looking for metals in aqueous solution, or, you know, to drinking water standards? And that's how you modify site specifically. All the worksheets are in the Uniform Federal Policy Generic QAP that we created. So all you need to do is look for the sheet that talks about water sampling and whether or not you are doing drinking water standards versus just surface water sampling. Did that answer the question?
I guess we'll find out. I don't. I'm hoping it does. And then there is a question here regarding how long it takes out to fill it, to fill out these forms. How long does it typically take to fill out the laboratory criteria worksheets?
It depends on how complicated and what kind of, you know, the more media you're sampling, the more complex. But for a single media sampling event, I believe they told us that the young lady that does it in Region 2 did one in 2 hours of an emergency response. So 2 hours from being notified that we had an incident, that we needed this particular sampling in this particular media, within the 2 hours, which takes the OSCs and the other ERS contractors to gear up, we had a site-specific QAP to respond with. And then that helps the REOC, which is our Regional Emergency Operations Center, to start making sure that you have the labs that are going to receive this. So by the time you get there, take the samples. Within 24 hours, you're either going to a private lab or you're going to a CLP. Again, the more familiar the person is with this format and this generic situation, the faster it could go. Where in the past, prior to World Trade Center, sometimes you came back from the site and you still don't know if you have sampled correctly or taken the samples correctly or identified the right method, and sometimes you end up going back because you didn't pick correctly. So it's easier as an OSC. I love this because it's easy to review and I can tick off, okay, this is the right media. Yes, this is the right method. I could look up the method myself. I could feel comfortable about signing off on this QAP. Either I bored the hell out of everybody, or
no? I think we have a correction or an explanation for the previous question about, you know, are these forms able to be modified? And the statement slash question is: currently, revisions are shown as revisions. Modifications such as adding other areas after cleanup has started are very routine. Often scopes change. This document doesn't seem to lend itself to clearly identify those changes. So it's I think, I don't know if it's at, you know, to you know, versioning or to show it, showing modifications.
Well, in the first page, slide 13, it says revision date and revision number. Mm-hmm. There you would identify it and add the particular worksheet that you need to modify. Also, when you go into your, let me see what slide it is. I'm I'm looking for the slide. In that particular one, worksheet number 2, slide 13, you're identifying the situation. So if you had to modify any of that, you would have the opportunity to do so there as well. And then the one that has the slide number 16, where you identify the problem, you would also modify that section as well. And then slide number 17, when you talk about project quality objectives and systematic planning process statement, whatever needed to be modified there on who, what, where, you would do so there as well and provide the additional worksheet to your plan and then have it re-signed in your first one where it talks about revision number, revision date. And so all of it would be put together instead of redoing everything. Does that answer the question?
I think it does. I hope it does.
No questions? No follow-up?
Not yet. If there's anybody on the phone that has a question, feel free to take your phone off mute and go ahead and ask that question now. It's #6 to unmute if you hit *6 to mute. Okay, so so we do have a clarification to the previous question, and so the question then is: so when we add these revisions that we were talking about, would they be clearly identified as addendums to the document? So I think what they're getting at is how do you keep track of the QA QA.
The QA. Well, if you look at the generic QAP that we gave you, you can see that it was submitted by Western Solution Inc. RST2, and you see revision 1 May 2008, revision 2 October 2009, revision 3 January 2011. So the front page is going to give you a running tab of how many revisions you've made. Now, if you're talking about some way,
I think they're talking about record keeping. Is that where you're going?
How do you
maintain your records?
Yeah. So if you're talking that you want to segregate, for example, revision 1, you clearly want to define or delineate where May 2008 material is in the document versus the October 2009 modifications and January 2011. If that's what you're talking about, then you can clearly just keep them by date in separate materials. But what's important is that you've identified all the new information and what kind of modifications you needed. And you can slice that however your agency and your authority requires you to do so. In our case, we just keep all the revisions here, and there's a note that goes with it from RST saying, as of January 2011, we have modified these sheets, but it's all one whole document. So let me know if I answered your question or I confused you.
Yeah, I was followed up with a statement regarding the requirement of EPA QAPs are to have a revision history page identifying the changes made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That's pretty much it.
Is there anybody on the phone lines that have questions? Can you unmute your phone and ask the questions now? And again, while we're waiting for some more questions here, I'll remind people that on slide 23, we have links to the additional resources where you can find the resources we're talking about today, and also the link to the feedback form where you can provide feedback on today's presentation, technical issues, and content delivery, all those types of things. We take those seriously. We appreciate it if you would fill out that feedback form. And on slide 24, this is fairly new, we have provided information on how to follow us, follow the events that on CLUIN through Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. We also still have our RSS feeds, and if you go to the cluin.org front page, we have a staying connected sidebar on the right-hand side, and it has links to stay connected in all these ways, as well as to download our newsletters, go to the podcast archive, and connect to these social media sites.
If anybody has any ideas or opinions about the generic QAP, feel free to email me or call me. My email is anderson.arlene, that's A-R-L-E-N-E, at epa.gov.
Yes, and that appears on the first slide of today's presentation, on the title slide.
I don't think I gave my email. I gave my phone number, but I didn't give my email.
Yeah, no, well, that would be on slide 3. So your phone number is on slide 3, and then on the title slide that we placed on the presentation.
Yeah, I see it. Thanks.
It's your email address is on there.
Yeah, and now I see it. Thank you.
I don't have any more questions that have come in. If there's nobody on the phone who has any questions,
well, hopefully this was useful for everybody, and
yep.
Take it out for a spin and let us know.
And with that, we appreciate your attendance of today's CLUIN webinar. And again, please fill out the feedback form and sign up to find out about our archives. In about 2 weeks, this presentation should appear in our archives online and be available for download. Thank you, everybody.